Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, May 5th, 2024. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, May 3rd, 2024, are the following. The 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21371, 21,371. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study, the share ID number is 21372, 21,372. This morning, A Vision for You presents, and you can have this too. And you can have this too. When we think about the miracles that abound as the result, as the result of these steps for compulsive overeaters, it is not too hard to start reciting the promises in our mind. The miracles of the promises. What a relief to know that we are promised recovery from the disease of compulsive overeating. Today we have the pleasure of being before one of the many examples of the miracle of recovery that throughout the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is declared and affirmed. The Big Book states on page 83, as the understood promises, that if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom. It doesn't say that we might know a new freedom, or that a few will find a new freedom, or if we hit the lottery by rare chance, that will be our chance to have freedom, or for those that are born lucky. No, it doesn't say anything like that at all. The words are very specific and all-inclusive, and the choice is ours. We are going to know a new freedom, a transformation, and this is for every single one of us. If I get it, you can have it too. And this is exactly what our guest speaker will be outlining for us today. Not necessarily page 83, but exactly what has happened to her and what can be, what is promised for every single one of us. The miracle that is promised. The pathway, the day-to-day experiences, the opportunities to challenge and surrender, clearing the way for restoration, being restored. Details of just how the miracle of recovery has happened will be described so that we too can follow in similar footsteps. But not without her. It has happened and has come to her as the result of these steps in a power greater. I have the honor of introducing our loyal and dear fellow in recovery who will be sharing her journey and insights under the empowering title, And You Can Have This Too. These words that I use here are not whimsical dreams. They are true and a solemn pledge and a covenant of transformation available to each one of us who set about the path of recovery with diligence, courage, and faith, walking away from the torture and the torment of the disease of compulsive overeating to a new way of life. Our guest speaker exhibits hope and promise of change. She will share with us by giving her testament to this change through perseverance and surrender to a power greater. In her presentation, she will illuminate the pathway so masterfully written in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So let us welcome her with open hearts and minds as we hear the invaluable wisdom and insights humbly gained through her own journey of recovery. Welcome, Marge O. from Massachusetts, and thank you for your courage, your resilience, and your unwavering commitment to the path of recovery. Your presence among us is a gift beyond measure, and your story is that of hope for all of us. Welcome, welcome, Marge O.
Thank you so much, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. May I ask my higher power to let me deliver on that? I'm Marge O. I'm from Walpole, Massachusetts, a small town about 18 miles southwest of Boston. I had the honor, and I do mean the honor, of being a member of Overeaters Anonymous for many, many 24 hours. I came in my 30s, and I knew immediately there was something going on in that room that I had to have a piece of it. That's a blessing. I didn't know that at the time. I just knew there was a shift. The first meeting I went to, I was a half hour late because it was listed incorrectly. And but the woman that was speaking, I just knew there was something she had. She had a peace and a serenity about her that was just amazing. I didn't know what any of the words meant. I did know what they meant. I didn't know what they meant in the context of how she was sharing. She was a normal body telling us she lost 100 pounds and that she wanted, but she found out she was here for the diet. And I can remember thinking, what else would I be here for? Well, I found out what else. Many, many things, many changes over the years as far as learning more about the disease, more than probably I ever would have thought. This disease runs deep and it can run wild. And so can I. Just a little background, I'm third oldest. There were 10 children in our house. One, my younger sister, my baby sister passed away. And there were 4 years between myself and my brother. And I can still remember sitting on the couch with my mother when my older sister and brother had gone off to school. And for lunch, we were having lettuce with sugar on it, just sitting there watching cooking shows. They used to be on for like 15 minutes. And I can remember always being hungry, always looking for something else. And so I'm a true believer in that I was born with this disease. And yes, there's a long alcoholism on both sides of the family. So it was probably predetermined. But there were, out of the 9 living kids, two were chunkies, myself and one of my sisters, and everybody else was a normal size. And nobody went back for more, except for my sister and I. We were always looking for more. But and I had a lot of responsibilities. I did grow up very responsible. My mother went to work after the 8th child was born. And my sister and I came home from school directly, and we swept and vacuumed, and we peeled 17 potatoes for quite a while. And we knew how to get everything ready to cook, but we didn't cook a lot. My mother did the cooking when she came in. And we did not have a lot of junk food around, so I thought. But I can still remember making peanut butter and marshmallow sandwiches and taking them outside and sitting out in a tree and eating them because I didn't want anybody bothering me or anybody looking for a piece of it. And so I was selfish from the beginning. I wasn't going to share my food. And I actually had a big reputation for that in my family. Marge doesn't share her food. She'll give you anything else, but don't ask her for her food. And I have been on many diets, and some of them worked. They all worked. They all worked if I followed them. It was the day I stopped following them or the day I weighed the magic number, then I was back into it. I could have this and I could have that. At one point, the desperate point came for me when I lost, when I stopped smoking, I gained 30 pounds within less than 3 months, and it became 50 pounds. And then I took that weight off, and it took a long time, and I was eating 3 meals a day, but I was not, I didn't have a higher power. I didn't know that I had a higher power that could help me. And I didn't know about OA either. I feel very fortunate that I heard about OA. And one of the things that I went to 2 meetings, I used to go to 3, but 2 were in the same place. And Tuesday nights, they read the big book 1 night a month. And that was my introduction. And I would also go to AA meetings because sometimes my kids were little. My husband worked a lot of hours. And I just couldn't always get to the third OA. So I'd go to an AA. And I would hear myself over and over and over, except it was with the food. And the same with the big book readings that we would do. It was, for me, all about the food. And it just resonated. And when big book became, quote, popular in our program, I was very drawn to that. I was very, very drawn to it because I just felt like they were talking about me so often in that book. So often. And I stayed with, quote, regular OA for a lot of years. I was abstinent. I, you know, was a normal body. And but I was searching for something else, apparently. And when the opportunity came, a dear friend of mine who became my vision sponsor talked about this meeting that she was going to and things that were going on in her life and what a difference made. And for the first time in many in many tribes, she was abstinent and staying abstinent and living happy, joyful, and free from the food. And I wanted that because even though I wasn't overeating and I wasn't compulsively, you know, shopping for junk food, I was feeling like I might be able to eat some of that one of these days. And that's a dangerous, dangerous thought process for me, because as the big book says, the idea that I'm ever going to be a normal eater has to be smashed. It's strong language, but oh my gosh, that's the truth of the matter. It had to be smashed. So I felt fortunate in many, many ways. I did not have to quit. I didn't have to leave the meetings to learn my lesson. I didn't have to go on a big binge to learn my meeting, but I was slowly but surely changing my eating habits. And one of the things I did not want to give up was flour. I gave up white flour, but I really wanted to be able to eat stone ground wheat bread, or, you know, certain things like that. And I learned in visions that it had to go. If I wanted to be entirely abstinent, many things had to go. And that I had that old belief that as long as the food had the ingredients, sugar was fifth or higher, then I could have it. And I learned here, nope, not a good idea, not certainly a good idea for me. So when I started this and I committed to that, and I learned more and more about what not to have in my food plan. And that's a blessing. I know that's a blessing that I was willing to do that and catch on. But I had that peace after I ate that I wasn't looking for more all the time. Now, do I have an emotional ups and downs sometimes that think, oh, you know, I used to think that way. Oh, maybe that would help. You know, I did that about smoking after I gave up smoking. It was a long time before I forgot about those cigarettes, like a good 5 years when something stressful would happen, which in my case could be the Edison bill was higher than I planned on. You know, I had $50 in the budget and it came in at 62. You know, that would be a reason to, wouldn't a cigarette make this feel better? And then why don't we have something really loaded with carbohydrates? You know, that would be the thought. And I learned here, I'm not responsible for that first thought because that is who I am. I am a compulsive eater. I have this disease. I have this thing. And that is but a symptom. And that is what I needed to say out loud, is that's a symptom. There's much more going on here. And so once again, I went through the 12 steps with the vision sponsor. And I wrote, and I was able to see that there were still cracks in the foundation here. You know, I always think of it as I had a lot of bricks in the foundation that had a crack in them, and they needed to be replaced or repaired, and that's the thought process for me. They needed to be replaced and repaired and beyond repaired. Really, the replacement of my thought process is really important, that I think that I can get away with this, that I think that I could do that. And speaking of the work, you know, you would think that after that many years and that many times going through the steps, that the next time I went through there wouldn't be much. But guess what? There was, you know, in all honesty, there was. And I just felt like this is a good cleansing. Once again, just taking a good look at myself. What kind of life am I living? Am I being helpful? For me, in my opinion, service is one of the places that you start to get better, that you start to realize that I am not the most important person in the room, that I'm not the most important person in the house. I have things to do in the house, and they're important, and especially when my kids were younger. You know, there were things to do that needed to be done, and I had to take the time to do them. But I also needed to find the time and make the time to do service for my OA. I still remember the first Sunday that I went off to an intergroup meeting. Imagine leaving two little kids home with a husband and who really wanted to go to work. He wanted no part of having to stay home because I was headed off to Brookline to do service like that on a Sunday morning. And oh my, if you're not doing that level of service and you've been around a while, the people you meet, the ideas that you have are just wonderful. People share and they talk, and I love the fact that I've learned to have some humility here and that it's okay to say things out loud. I didn't always trust I thought that it was that you, I couldn't trust that once you really knew the real me, that you wouldn't throw me out of the group. It wasn't a matter of trusting you with a secret or that, but it's all about the 12 steps here. It's truly about the fellowship. Is very important. It's very important we do service for one another, that we take calls and we make calls. And if we follow the steps and you do step 12, you know darn right well, it's the crown jewel. It is what keeps us, for me, it's what keeps me level. It keeps me on the path of the happy path, the serenity, the peace of serenity and of kindness and of goodwill. And, you know, I could look like a kind person and not be a kind person at all. So working my steps and not just working them, but living in them, doing them, and knowing that if I'm not on firm ground, that I need to look at the step before. I learned that here, that if I'm having trouble with step 3, back up and say, do I believe? Do I believe that I'm worth it, that the power is greater than myself? Who is that? What is that? I didn't particularly have any trouble with God. I particularly like knowing that I can pray to God, and that is, you know, what I do. And I take my time, my meditation time, because I have to remember it's prayer and meditation. And it's not just saying a quick prayer here and there. That's helpful. That is helpful. That opens me up. But I do know this about food, that if I get into it, I learned this too. I went to Los Angeles a few years back when I was first new in the visions, and I heard the speaker sharing the 12 steps, and some of the things that she said I will never forget. And this is a good thought to have in your head as far as what the food can do to you. And that even though it's a symptom, we just really, you know, to know that my body can't handle it and my mind cannot leave it alone. And that's all about that craving, that one bite, that first bite. And the other thing, one of the other things that I learned was that once I have that one bite, and then the next, you ask, your body asks for a second bite, and then the third bite, it requires a third bite, and then it demands a fourth bite. And then, for me, all heck breaks loose. You know, it would be just down that path. I have made chocolate cakes and told myself they were for the family and hid them until I could eat the whole thing myself. So I know about that first bite leads to. And all of these things, all the diets in the world, all of that just did not work for any length of time. And that's what I had to learn here, that I had to do my step work. I had to do my fourth step. I had to learn about resentments and how to turn them over. And to take a good look at myself, and that my fourth step was really preparation for my eighth and ninth step, especially for my eighth step. That's where my list came from. And to know that as terrible as I felt about myself, I was never going to feel better until I did my step work. And the fourth and fifth step were the beginning for me. And I thought when I did my fifth step, I thought, oh, good, I'm going to do my fifth step. I'm all over. It's over. I don't have to worry about it. I really, really came out feeling like I barely scratched the surface, that here I go. I really have to keep going forward and hope to God that I live through this. I live to tell the story, because I really felt like a really crummy human being. And then when I did my eighth and ninth step, I suggest anybody do this. Do you really want the freedom and the joy from the food and a better life? Because it isn't just about the food. It's about living a different life and becoming a different person, and not to be resentful at everything that doesn't go my way, or be mad at this guy because he did this or she did that, or I had to wait too long in line. And it was finally my turn, and the person said, can you wait one more minute? And I'm standing there thinking, no, but I guess I have to. And be able to smile and say, okay, I'll wait. You know, I'll wait my turn. And those kinds of little things, those are the things that got me into trouble all the time with different people, but especially with my own family, that I could be Mrs. Nice Guy out there in the real world and then come home and be, as somebody mentioned earlier, you know, a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and nobody knew quite where I was coming from. I have this alcoholic personality. I'm a believer in that, and that all bets are off when certain things might happen. And if I didn't have the steps in these meetings and to do the work that I do as far as, you know, giving of myself, giving time, and taking calls and making calls, and being a sponsor, it's so important that, you know, that I had, that's what I had to learn. And fortunately, I picked the message up early on. And then as time has gone on, I'm in 3 programs total. And there's a lot of phone calls that come and go here. And there's times that, you know, sometimes it's so busy, I have to write it in the calendar to make sure I'm actually, you know, available for the time that I said. And that's part of my, I want to take on too much, because I'm of the belief that if somebody calls you, they really need to hear from you. If you call newcomers and you leave a message, that's fine. But when people call, I try my level best to get back the same day because I just think it's that key. I have to keep giving of myself so that I am keenly aware of this disease and what it can do for you. And what it won't do for you if you eat and you only take care of yourself, that I have to reach out to others to make sure that is part, you know, a part of my day. And to say my prayer in the morning, you know, God, what would you have me be? God, where would you have me go today? What am I supposed to do? I have a husband that has 4-stage esophageal cancer. There's many appointments that have to be, and they have increased immensely this past year. I finally retired from my job. I'm 78 years old. I loved my work. I would have worked till I went out the front door with my boots on, but it wasn't to be. And I gave that idea up. And it was difficult to leave because I did love it. And I enjoyed my people that I worked with, and I enjoyed being out there. I was in sales, and I loved my clients and customers, and it was a busy job, which, I like being busy, but it just wasn't, it was time to go, you know. And I have a sister that lives near here, and she comes to my house 1 or 2 days a week, 5 in the morning. She has Alzheimer's, and my sister and I share the work, and her son has her, and I say a little prayer for him every day because at 50 years old, he looks so worn out. It's really sad. I felt called to do that, that I didn't have to do that. I could have said no, but that's another change. I'm thinking of somebody else, not just my sister, but also my nephew, that it's a lot for one person to handle and work full time. So that, you know, I enjoy having her here, to be honest with you. It's just kind of one day I just have to stay home. That's all there is to it, because you know, it's too confusing for her now to go. I can go to one person's house, and that's the only place I can go, and she's comfortable. So, you know, giving of myself and giving of my time, because there was a time when I thought, when I retire, first of all, I always thought by the time I was 70, I wouldn't have to come here anymore. I was planning on that, and then I found out as time went by, nope, that's not to be. I want to be. Here's the thing, I want to be here with you. I want to work my steps. I want to have the blessing of the my higher power and the program and doing the step work and going out each day with a positive feeling that I'll be okay today. No matter what happens, I can do this. I have people call if I need to, but mostly I have that prayer that I just go forward. And whatever comes up, that my higher power will get me through it. I might not like it. I might not like the answers I get. I've learned that that doesn't really matter, Marge. What really matters is what's happening right in front of you, and that you put one foot in front of you and you keep going. And I think that, you know, has been a big lesson, because I was so busy rushing through life. You talk about, you know, in the step book, it talks about, you know, that like a motorboat, we just leave all these people crashed, you know, and we're just powering through. And I was like that, you know, and it isn't that I can't be like that. See, that's the thing. is that I have to constantly be reminded of in this program is that that can come back in a very short amount of time, because as long as I've been doing this, there is that person in there that wants to do whatever she wants to do, wants her way, wants to have fun, wants to go to the beach, even though the responsible thing to do would to be, you know, stay home and meet the guy that's fixing my chimney or, you know, those kinds of things. And I don't always want to do that. And sometimes I just have to stop and say, what's more important here? And to recognize, okay, my higher power, you know, I'm talking to my higher power, and my higher power says, stay home. You won't be sorry that you stayed home. And that's often been true. Different things happen, you know, different things happen. And to talk about the joy in my life, because, yeah, I have those sad things. It's sad that my husband has fourth stage esophageal cancer. It's sad that three of my siblings have mind issues, as far as two of them have Alzheimer's and very advanced, and one has dementia, and I think they call it body Lewy's. It's a terrible disease, and yet it's not, you know, there's nothing I can do about it except be helpful where I can. Go visit my sister in Wilmington every 7 or 10 days and say hello and tell her husband, go head out, go have a cup of coffee at the senior center or something. Things like that, the giving. And not to do it just because, oh, everybody's going to treat me well when it's my turn, because I don't know what I'm going to end up with. Maybe I'm just going to live to be 90 and just go out in a natural death. I don't know. None of us know that. But to just know a day at a time that I'm living right and that I'm doing for others and that I'm enjoying my life, even with that stuff, if you want to call it that. I have a granddaughter getting married. I have another granddaughter that lives in at Seaport. I have a younger granddaughter that's going to graduate from college. That was a kid that didn't even want to go to school in the third grade because she knew she wasn't learning at the pace everybody else was, and she was having difficulties. And she's going to graduate from college, I mean, truly, with good marks, not just, you know, not all C's and D's. She's coming out with, you know, with A's and B's. And just, you know, to see that, you can tell by my voice, it brings me a lot of joy just to know she's doing something that she really wants to do, and she's going to accomplish that, you know. And my daughters don't live nearby. One lives in Maine, one lives in Virginia, but we get together, you know, we make plans, and we see each other, and we do the best we can when it comes to that. But just to know that there's plenty of good happening in my life a day at a time, and that joy of living free of the food, that I don't have to not go someplace because I can't handle watching somebody else eat. I don't have to do that. I go anywhere I want to go, anywhere. And I just know that this is mine and that's yours. And if I think for 1 minute it's going to be a huge problem, I eat before or I eat after. I don't have to have that. I don't have to sit there and feel sorry for myself. I just know I have enough or there will be enough later, that I'm not interested in getting into desserts or any of that or any of the foods that, you know. And that's another thing that I found out about alcoholic foods, you know, the red light foods, that to do an honest list of that and look that over, what needs to be on there. Plenty. And that has what I had fallen into, was thinking, well, I can have a few of these and I can have a few of those. And I could. I did. I had a few. And then the next day it was a few more. And the next day it was a few more. So that thing that, you know, this disease that wants to take over and, you know, ruin my life and make me the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Well, either that, it just made me sleepy and lazy. Holy moly. I could eat my lunch and then I'd need an hour nap because I would just be, you know, wanting to go sound asleep and then get up and do it all over again. I don't want to live like that. I want to live like this. This is a miracle. This is, you know, part of, you know, my program a day at a time is to remind myself how fortunate I am. And that when I talk to my sponsees, to say, it's worth the work. It's worth the work. It's worth giving certain things up for. It's worth doing first things first, that my program and my higher power, you know, that works, that this is what's working a day at a time in my life, and that I'm really happy that I can do that. So I just feel like for today, that's the story of Majo from Massachusetts, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very, very much, Marge. Oh, beautiful presentation. So glad that you're here with us. So glad to have the recording of your presentation. Thank you again. You've given so much of your heart. So guess what? It is now. A question for Marge O this morning. Please give your name, the first letter of your last name, your state, and ask your question. When you're done asking your question, please mute again. Before I go on and grab those names up, I'd like to give you the share ID number for today's Sunday special edition. This will be May 5th, 2024, and that share ID number is 21374, 21374. So again, I'm ready to take some names if you would like to ask Marge O a question this morning about her presentation or that of recovery.
Chris G. in Tennessee.
Chris G., good morning. Maggie, what did you say?
Donna.
Maggie and Donna. Maggie, say one more time. The first initial, your last name, your state?
Maggie A. from Massachusetts.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And Donna, would you give me the first initial of your last name and your state?
Donna D. in New York.
B. Donna B. in New York. Okay. Anyone else this morning with a question?
Pat B., Ontario, Canada.
Pat B., Ontario, Canada. Thank you. Let's get started with that particular lineup for right now, and then we will see what's next after that. This will inspire other questions, I'm sure. So if you're ready, Marge O., Chris G. will have the first question this morning, followed by Maggie.
Thank you, Marge. Thank you. Thank you for sharing with us your story. I appreciate it. And I wanted to ask you about your experience with the spiritual awakening. I'm sure I had an educational variety. I haven't had one day that I can say, this is it, this is the day. I went to lots of OA meetings, and then I went to some AA meetings, and then I didn't know how to get the recovery I saw in other people. I did need to see examples of other people, and you're a great example for me. So how did you see examples of recovery in other people, and what was your experience with spiritual awakening?
Hi, Chris. Thanks. Thanks for the question. It's a good one. From my view of the spiritual experience among people, I just saw them change right before my eyes because I was, going to in-person meetings, and I saw people just become different people. For me, it is an inside job, and for me, it wasn't like one big spiritual, but for me, part of that was to become abstinent because I could never, never, ever stay abstinent, what we define as abstinent before I came to program. And the other part was noting that I was changing, noticing that I don't always have to have, I don't always have to get mad about that or carry a resentment. I don't always have to do it this way, that I can change. And to know that something was keeping me away from the food, and it sure the heck wasn't me. It wasn't what I thought or what I did. It was definitely something bigger than me that had the power that when I said, give me a hand here, I need some different thought process, that would happen to me. So it was a gradual change. It wasn't, and I know I've had friends in program that have come in and said they were struck abstinent, and, they believed immediately that that was a higher power, that that was their spiritual experience. That's not what happened to me. I just watched others just change and flower, literally flower right in front of me, that, they were this when they came in, and through their sharings and phone calls and whatnot and being with them. Because we did, we were fortunate back then. I think we had something we didn't really realize how fortunate we, that we spent time with people. We went for coffee after meetings. We talked to one another. We invited each other, you know, to each other's homes, things like that. We don't, you know, we don't really have that as much anymore. And Visions is entirely different. So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you very much for your question this morning, Chris G. We're going to move on to Maggie from Massachusetts. Your question, please, and that will be followed by Donna.
Yes, thank you. I'm Maggie A. from Western Massachusetts. And my question is, do you still deal with feelings of fear now and then, fear, anxiety, and what's your, how do you respond to that? Thank you.
Would you ask me the question, fear, or have I missed the word?
Yes, like feelings of fear or anxiety.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay. Yes, I do. I do. And I do have feelings every once in a while. I've got, you know, like I say, my husband's, you know, I can see the difference in him, especially in the last few months, that he doesn't quite have the energy that he had, that we're doing more tests, and there were, you know, there's things going on in his body that weren't happening 6 months ago. And every once in a while, I think, what are you going to do when you're all by yourself? Or, what am I, you know, is he going to get really ill? Or are you be able to handle that a day at a time if he, you know, becomes bedridden or, you know, semi-conscious or any of that? And how I handle that is I talk about it, number one. And then number two, I really do, in my evening meditation especially, I look over the day and I think, okay, I need to turn this over to a higher power to give me the strength to do it a day at a time. I think we all have some fears and some anxieties. I just don't want to live in them. I don't want them to own me. And that, in the way for me not to have, to own, you know, to have it own me and drive me, is to share that with another person, share that with a fellow, share that with a sister. You know, I'm the only one in my family in the program, any program. And but I have a sister and I that think a lot, we think a lot alike, you know, and so it's easy to share some of these fears with her. So I think, you know, a day at a time, I do have them. They float in and out, but mostly that's what they do. They float. I don't let them stick around too long. I just ask God to remove them and to just give me that courage, because it's about courage sometimes for me, just to have the courage to put one foot in front of the other and face the day and be as joyful, look for the joy in the day, that I'm on the road to happy destiny and that I can accept what comes my way. So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Maggie A. from Massachusetts, for your question this morning. Next up is Donna B. from New York, followed by Pat B., and then we'll open up the line again.
Hi, this is Donna from New York. I just want to thank you so much for your share, and I'm really getting across that on how to deal with life happening, and I appreciate that so much. You said a couple of things, and I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to ask you to repeat them. You said something about my body can't handle it, and neither can my mind, and you kind of put a couple of numbers of what happens in your body. Would you be able to repeat that?
Yeah, thank you, Donna. Nice to meet you, so to speak. You know, the body can't handle it. I'm just looking to see, because I had written that down. My body can't handle it, and my mind can't leave it alone. So once I imbibe, once I take it in, say a cupcake, thinking, oh, I'm just going to have a bite of that. And then suddenly the body, the physical craving kicks in, and then my mind won't let it go. You can have that much. You can have a little more of that. You can finish that off. It's okay. And that's what used to happen to me. And it's just so true for me, and I think for probably most overeaters, that you know, once that sugar is in it or whatever it, whatever the product is, that it really doesn't belong in there. Mostly for me, it would be, you know, sugar and all sugar, fat, salt, sugar and fat, we used to say. You know, they were the nemesis as far as food went. And that keeping that thought, knowing I can admire something, I can go into a bakery and buy food, that's okay. I know it's not mine. I have to say that sometimes. That's not for you. Because there's foods that get disguised, in my opinion, for me. You know, I think, well, that doesn't look so bad. Look at that. It's got bran in it. That must be good for my body. But forgetting about all the other ingredients that they're throwing in there, that, you know, and personally, for me, the mind usually comes first. You know, I'll see something and it'll think, oh, maybe you could have that. Or maybe you could do this. That's what used to happen. And once it's in my body, it's just like I have no control anymore. And I don't. I don't have any choice anymore. I have to have the rest of it and maybe another one, even if it was the largest muffin I ever saw in my life. Because, you know, why not? At that point, I've lost all. I don't care if I'm stuffing my face. I don't care if I'm buying 6 muffins and pretending I only bought 2 and I'm using the rest of them. And the mind will tell me it's okay. And the body's screaming for more. And I just feel like that's where I spent a lot of time before program. Because I've been an overeater ever since I can remember. Since I was a little kid, I wanted to eat. I hope that's helpful, Don.
Thank you very much, Donna B. from New York, for your question. Next up with a question would be Pat B. from Ontario, Canada. And then we're going to open it up for additional questions this morning. Hopefully that spurred on some more great, great questions this morning. Hey, Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Melanie and Marge. Thank you so much for your service. It's been a wonderful morning so far. I just wondered, Marge, about your relationship with your higher power. It sounds like you have a very strong one right now. Did you start off that way? Or when you came in, what was your conception of God?
Thank you. So I had the Baltimore Catechism, which was the catechism they used when I was a little girl. And that's the conception I had of God. He was there. And you better behave yourself. You better watch out. God sees everything. And so not that I felt like afraid of him, just that he was watching. And he was keeping a list. And so, you know, when you got to the pearly gates, you wouldn't get let in. No, sir. Not you. So when I came to program, I lost weight many times, but I had that last time when I took the 50 pounds off and then immediately started to eat, and, you know, in between meals, just a little of this and a little of that. I had no idea that a higher power would help me with that. I didn't know if I didn't think I was worthy of it. I don't know. It never occurred to me until I came to program. And I didn't want to give everything up in the beginning. I mean, I did not want to. And I learned that if I would turn my life daily over to a higher power, if I would say a few prayers, and sit there and be quiet and have a little bit of a chat with my higher power. And if I believed that and I trusted that God had my back, that God was the one that could, for me, it's God. It doesn't have to be just that for me, that's what worked. That I believed that my higher power wants me well, wants me healthy, wants me a normal weight, and wants me to live in my 12 steps, not just talk about them, but to do the work there, and especially 10, 11, and 12. And I couldn't tell you which one's the most important, but for me, most of the time, it is 11 and 12. 10 I find challenging sometimes, because I still will slip into that, you know, like, well, if he hadn't said that, I wouldn't have said this. Well, hello, there's no excuses anymore, but no. I really trust my higher power. And it came slowly, but it's there. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat B., for your question from Ontario, Canada. Hey, we're going to take more names this morning for questions for you, Marge, so hang in there. Anyone else interested in asking a question, Marge, this morning? First name, first letter of your last name, and your state.
Nancy L., Arizona.
Got it. Thank you, Nancy. Good morning.
Christina O.
Christina O.
Anayeta R. from Texas.
Anayeta R. Texas. Anyone else with a question this morning? Let's jump right into Nancy L.'s question from Arizona, and we'll get some others in afterwards. And then that will be followed by Christina. Yeah.
Thank you, Marge, so much. Good morning.
Yes,
I have a question. You have a busy life, and I just was wondering, what do you do when you're out and about and it's mealtime? You've either been stuck in traffic or you had to wait in the doctor's office much longer than you thought. What do you do in a situation like that, please? Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question, Nancy, because I've had that happen to me several times, to be honest with you, or something unexpected happened at 11:15 and have to go somewhere and take care of something or help somebody or, you know, or whatever. Or the nurses come at 11:30 and they're still there at 12:45, so I do have that. So for the most part, what I do is just say a little prayer to my higher power and just say, okay, I know I'm not going to starve to death. I know I'm going to be okay. Don't need to get upset, angry, or, you know, or feeling that, oh, poor me, I'm going to be hungry, that I am going to be hungry, but I'm going to be okay. And that I had made plans. You know, most of the time I know what I'm going to eat every single day. And I make plans. Now, if I go somewhere and I know I could be tied up, I've been known to pack my lunch so that I don't have to do, you know, wait another half an hour to drive home or an hour or whatever. But for the most part, I really do just lean into my higher power and say, you know, I need your help right now. I just need to. And guess what? The phone will ring. Something will happen, even if I'm in a doctor's office. I can text somebody. It will take my mind off. I get taken care of. That's the only way I can describe it. And if it's a long haul, I would call somebody and just say, I'm sitting here and I'm really hungry and I need a distraction. You know? So I often, you know, just think that I have to be reminded that it's okay. It's okay. A little suffering isn't going to hurt me. I will be all right. And to just, it's fuel, but you could be running low on it, but I believe I'll be okay. Thanks for the question.
Thank you for, thank you, Nancy L. from Arizona. Christina, your question this morning.
Thank you, Melody, and thank you, a speaker, IQ living in Massachusetts. And my question is, I have been plagued really throughout my life with crippling fear and self-pity. And I've worked the steps, and it's not as virulent as it has been now that I'm older. But do you have any suggestions of how to deal with fear and self-pity?
Hi, thank you for the question. I think the biggest thing is to make sure that you are meditating and that you are connected to a higher power of some kind. It's probably a spiritual answer. It almost always is. However, I also think reaching out to others and just saying, I'm really having a tough time with this, whatever it is, whatever, you know, whatever the, you know, your fear is for today. Sometimes we don't know. We just go into that anxious feeling and you think, what the heck is this about? You know, or at least that's how I feel sometimes. Like, who am I, what am I worried about? You know, and I do know personally for me, when I have that, I'm thinking way ahead of time. I'm not staying in the now. I'm not staying in the day or even the hour, never mind the whole day. And that I think that just if you can quiet down and sit quietly somewhere and perhaps pick up a book that, you know, it's one of your spiritual books, one of your, you know, if you have your big book. Sometimes I just open the big book, and whatever page or whatever story it's on, that's what I read, because that is the examples that I have to follow. It's the people that have lived with this disease, and a day at a time, they're not, you know, they're not eating, they're not drinking, they're not, whatever it is they're not doing, and often it's more than one thing. I find, you know, that most of my fellows have had difficulty with more than one thing, not just food, you know, and I just think sitting quietly, calling somebody and sitting quietly and talking to your higher power and just asking to be relieved of this, and that just keep me in the now, to say that little prayer on your lips, keep me in the now. And it takes practice. That's the truth of it. It takes practice. All of this does. It's, you know, that's how you get better at something, is you just keep practicing it. So I hope that was helpful.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Christina O., for your question from Massachusetts this morning. Next up, Aniyeta R. from Texas. Your question, please, and then we'll open it up again for additional questions.
Hi, good morning, and thank you, Melanie and Marge. You're always right there for us. Melanie, thank you so much. My question is, you just mentioned that when you think about your foods and what you would not want to would be, you said sugar, fats, and salt. And I didn't hear you mention flour. Is that because those are my three things, is sugar, fats, and salt. And flour really doesn't bother me. But, you know, some people say, oh, you still shouldn't eat it. It's not, you know, you shouldn't. I don't have it very often. But if I do, I do. But, and it doesn't bother me. So I was just wondering, are those your three main things also?
Yes, except flour is in there. I don't have flour anymore. You know, I don't have white flour, and I don't make sandwiches with, you know, with bread. I don't have bread, and I really don't do that. I might use, you know, like cornmeal, something else, but I don't use flour. It is one of the ones. In fact, I had to really commit one day at a time not to eat it. In the beginning, when I decided, no, I really shouldn't have this. I can see it, because I would eat something and then I would still be hungry, and I knew I had enough. That, you know, it was enough. It was a sandwich, and there was this, and your fruit, and, you know, I had my coffee or, you know, my whatever I was drinking, and I would still want more, so I had to. So I'm one of the ones that really can't have that either. It's in my list. It's on my list. I shouldn't say it. On my list of things that I don't have anymore.
Thank you, Aniyeta R. from Texas, for your question this morning. Are there any other questions for Marge this morning? If you have one, please unmute your phone by pressing star one. Hi, Karen K. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Sarah B. from Michigan.
Oh, hey, Sarah B. from Michigan. Good morning. Anyone else with a question this morning? Press star one if you don't, if you're new and you don't know, and it's also then star one to remute your phone. Let's go with Karen K. then from New York with her question, and then we'll follow with Sarah B., and then we'll see about time for those that are still interested in asking questions. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. My name is Karen Kay, recovered compulsive eater from Syracuse, New York, and my credits don't transfer. I don't know if I heard you right when you were talking about you have a little difficulty or challenging on a tenth step. Could you tell me why that is or how you do your tenth step? I may have heard you wrong.
Sure. It isn't exactly a difficulty, although when I first started doing them, I thought, like, oh, who wants to hear this? It's such nonsense, because it is sometimes just nonsense behavior on my part. And yet I know that I need to, you know, to call somebody and talk about it. And it's always about a resentment over something almost ridiculous lots of times. And yet I know that if I carry it, that's what I mean, that I have difficulty, like if I don't do it, I'm in more trouble because I know downright well that I need to make an apology or to make an amend, and I need to tell somebody, you know, why I became so resentful, to be able to say out loud. So what I do is I do call somebody and I do go over it, or I check somebody and say, can you take a 10 step now and go through that. And I also often, you know, I write about it. Why did that push all those buttons? Why did it affect me so? Why did I get so upset or so angry or so resentful? Because I go right from 0 to 10 when it comes to that. Like, you know, oh boy, I'm really ticked or whatever. And then I realize I don't want to live in that state. And so I don't want those things hanging around. So but I still have that little bit of, do they really want to listen to this? You know, do I call this person and just say and take their time? So I suffer with it. That's what I mean about a difficulty sometimes. But underneath that, I'm sure it's all ego. I'm sure it's like, I don't want to admit that I said that, or I don't want to admit that I did that. So I just feel like I have to keep on keeping on. And that the longer I live in this program, working this program and living this program, I don't have as many as I used to have. I'll tell you what, it did change for me. That's got to be part of the miracle, that recognizing my behavior and, you know, working on being a better person and recognizing that people say what they say and they don't always mean to offend me. And I don't have to take it that way either. So I have some freedom around that, which I didn't when I was younger. So that's for birth sure. So that's what I meant, Karen.
Thank you very much, Karen K, for your question this morning from New York. Sarah B., your question this morning from Michigan. Good morning, Sarah.
Thank you. This is Sarah B. from Recovering in Michigan. Marge, I wanted another repeat of something. You said, just the languaging was great, that when you said about taking the bite, wanting it, then desiring it, then demanding it, like there was some kind of language you used around. I just thought that was great, and I wonder if you had that written down or if you had.
I do. Let me just find it, because I did write, because I thought it was important. You know, when I heard that, I thought, wow, that sums it up, you know.
Yeah.
And so the first bite asks for a second bite. So you have the bite, and it just asks, kind of like, go ahead and have another bite, or please have another bite. And then the second bite requires a third bite. So now you have I have this feeling like I really need a little more of that. I'll be satisfied after that. And after the third bite, then the demand starts. I have to have that. I've got to have the rest of that. I've got to have more of that. I must. I absolutely must. Because then I really have, you know, you lose control in the first bite, but I don't always know that. But by the fourth bite, I know that I would be in big trouble. And that's how that worked for me. And that was somebody sharing that at the Los Angeles when I went to the birthday party. And she was working on the steps. She said a lot of brilliant things that really made sense to me, you know, and it made sense to a lot of people, I think, because there was a lot of talk later about it. It's just like, wow. So I hope that was helpful.
Thank you very much, Sarah B., for asking that question and being able to hear that a second round. It is helpful, Marge. Sarah B. from Michigan, you know, we do have plenty of time. If there are any questions out there for Marge, please press star 1 on your phone keypad, and we'll take your name, first letter of your last name, and your date.
Sonia S. from Pennsylvania.
Sonia S. P-A. Gotcha.
Annette. Lisa S.
Annette, what's your first initial or last name?
Yeah, Evan Frank.
Evan and Frank. Yep. Okay, and then Felicia, yes. Did I hear you?
Yes, Felicia S. from New Jersey.
From New Jersey, okay. Who else? This
Barbara A., California.
Barbara A., California. Anyone else before we move on?
Cheryl S. from North Carolina.
Cheryl S. like Sam from North Carolina?
Correct. Thank you.
Okay, good. Got it. Thank you so much. Okay, first up, Sonia S. from Pennsylvania, followed by Annette F. Sonia, your question this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you all for your service. This is Sonia S. from Pennsylvania, and came on 15 minutes late. I apologize for that. I was just wondering, well, first, I'm not abstinent, and I broke my abstinence yesterday and this morning, and I'm still here, and I'm on the meeting, and I wasn't sure if you shared about having struggled in program, and then if so, what was your bottom?
Thank you. Thanks for the question. I struggled in the beginning. I really did. I did not want to give up flour. I thought I was giving up sugar, and I read the labels, and I did that. But I didn't realize how much more work I had to do to be free of the food. And so, yes, I did struggle. And I went to meetings. There's one thing I didn't say, it's probably plenty I didn't say, you know, about afterburn after you speak, but don't leave this program no matter what, whether you're eating or you're not eating. Stay and listen to what other people have to say. One of the reasons that I was able to stay abstinent for many years was because I listened to what other people said when they left the program, or they ate. I believed it was every bit as painful as they said it was. So I think, you know, a day at a time. So, you know, so you said you fell off the wagon. Today's a new day. Simply resume, start over, call a few people, because I always believe in there's a lot of emotional support needed when you do something like that. And I've broken my abstinence after many years over just one of the problems I have, too, is that I would skip a meal. And that had to become part of my abstinence, is to make sure I eat my breakfast, lunch, and my dinner, and that I eat, you know, eat the food with it, because I would skip it, and then I'd be not getting home till 8 o'clock at night. And I broke my abstinence one time over a muffin because I couldn't stand being hungry one more minute. And it did lead to difficulties for quite a while, because it was like cheating on your boyfriend, you know? You're just like, you know you shouldn't be doing this, and you're doing it anyway. But that's the problem. I lost all control once I don't have any choice, once I'm into it. So I learned a good lesson from that, and I am truly grateful that I did not have to do that again. I did not. I stayed the course, so to speak, and just kept doing, you know, telling people what I did, and then got cleaned up again and went back to sponsoring and talking to others and taking calls. It's really important to reach out. You don't have to get to step 12 to reach out to people and encourage them, or to say something about yourself that you're not especially proud of. That ego has to be smashed too, along with the idea that we can eat like normal people. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you so much, Sonia S. from Pennsylvania, for your question. And
thank you
F.,
so much.
Your question you're this welcome. Morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Annette F., and I'm recovering in Florida. I have a question for you, Marge. It definitely sounds like you've got plenty of challenges, life challenges,
yeah.
To say the least, right? Number one, were you abstinent when the health challenges started? And do you ever get angry and discouraged about it and want to just throw your hands up in the air?
Oh, thanks. That's a great question. So, to be honest, I was abstinent, and I was in visions. Everything happened at the same time. COVID came, cancer showed up, visions showed up and saved my life. That's all I can say about it. And and with that, a higher power that I, you know, that I leaned on more than I ever could. I used to sit out in the car while my, I couldn't even go into the hospital with him and while he was having his treatment. And I would sit in the car and I would listen to visions and I would have my breakfast in the car. And sometimes I'm not a big crier, you know, I just not. But sometimes I just have a little cry for myself and feel sorry for myself for a little bit. But truthfully, I kept asking for the courage to go through the day and to answer the questions and to be as supportive to my husband as possible. And sometimes that was just sitting in a chair and watching grit TV with him. Not that I love grit TV, but just being in the room, because he and I are both goers and doers, and my husband loves his work and he works a lot. And if I wanted to take his inventory, I could say maybe too much, but that's just, I ate and spent money. My husband worked, you know, we're going to be married 58 years this year. It's a miracle. There's another miracle in my life. I don't think I would have made it. I don't know if I'd be alive, to be honest with you. I feel so terrible about myself, but, so I don't really get angry and discouraged. Once in a while, the fear and the anxiety will show up and think, oh boy, now we've got to do this, now we've got to do that, you know, and just listening. When I go to the doctor with him, I'm the one that takes the notes and listens to what the doctor says. And then he'll ask me, I never tell him, this is what the doctor said. I just say, wait for the questions. And they come. And then, but I don't get angry about it. I just feel like life is life. It deals these, you know, we get the hand dealt to us, and that I have a lot of good in my life and a lot of joy and a lot of fun. And, you know, I have fun with my sister, with the Alzheimer's, with the nurse, and, you know, and even the social worker. We always have a couple of laughs before they go, you know, because it's funny. My sister was a hot ticket, and let me tell you, she's been over the years, and she's still a lot of work. But we get a lot of laughs and a lot of joy. I have to be honest, you've got to look for the joy. And there is joy there. There is joy to be had every day, even if it's just talking to another fellow that is abstinent and grateful for their day. And I hope that's helpful.
Thank you very much, Annette F. from Florida, for your question. Next up is Felicia S. from New Jersey, followed by Barbara.
Felicia S., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from New Jersey, and thank you all for your service in making this meeting possible. I was curious, from an 11-step perspective,
mm-hmm.
obviously you've been doing this for a long time now. What is your current 11-step routine, and what are some of the biggest changes you've made that you have found most helpful into your longer-term recovery?
Okay. Thank you. That's a great question. Because when I first heard about meditation, I thought, I don't know if I can sit still long enough. You might catch that from my speech. I'm used to moving. I'm one of those rapid people. But and I bought a book on it, to believe it or not, because I wanted to do that. I knew that other people, I was in the program, and other people were having great success with their food and their everyday life problems. Everything isn't about the food; it's all the rest of it. You know, that's the way that I handle things a day at a time, and the reason that I do it perfectly. But my currently meditation in the morning, a good 15 to 30 minutes, depending. If I don't do that before I leave, because some mornings I have to be out of here really early, if I don't do that before I leave, I do that in the morning when I get somewhere or when I come out of whatever I had to do. I might just sit in the car. I might open my big book, read for a little bit, and just sit quietly. I have my own vision of my higher power. He and I are sitting on the beach, and we're having a great conversation. Some birds in the background, little voices, happy kids, the sound of the waves. And I often can just sit quietly in that. And I get direction from that. You know, it might not be that minute, but later in the day, it's just like it tells us. It'll that will come in. Then at night, I do my my 11-step work. I do my list of, you know, how the day went and what was I good to people, you know, was I kind and loving to people, or was I a jamoke, and do I owe an apology? You know, all of the 10 questions, I write those out. Although lately I've been doing them on my, I still type them, but I'm trying to decide if I did better when I wrote them down and then to do it on my phone. But I don't think that's a big deal. I just have to decide. You know, I do like writing things. I find it very helpful. But so that's what I currently do. And then all day long, whatever it is, sometimes I'm just driving the car by myself, and I might just say a prayer that I knew from, you know, childhood, or just a prayer from, you know, my weekly church, you know, whatever, just that I know that I feel protected and taken care of. That's what I feel today. And so to do that, I pay it homage by sitting down and being quiet. And just, you know, because when I miss it, I really miss it. So that is why if I go somewhere, I get back in the car and I say, okay, just sit quietly here for 5 minutes and think about what's your higher power. Where should I be? What should I be doing? What would you have me do? You know, just turning my life and my will over. And maybe I say the 3rd step prayer. It just depends. But I feel very connected to my higher power. And it's the answer as far as that big spiritual condition. So then I don't even see the food. I don't even see it. It's just there. This is mine. That's yours. We eat entirely different food plans here. My husband can eat whatever he wants. Raptors don't even care. It can be all sugar. It doesn't matter. It can be all sugar and chocolate. As long as he's not losing weight, they're happy. I hope that's
helpful.
Thank
you very much. Thank you very much, Felicia S. from New Jersey, for your question this morning. Next up is Barbara. Barbara A. from California. Your question, please.
Good morning, moderator. Hello, Marge. Thank you for your share. This is Barbara A. from California, gratefully recovered by the grace of God. I related so much to many parts of your story. I particularly heard you say you have this behavior that you may not have it anymore, that you do things with people thinking that, oh, if I do this, I'm going to be taken care of when I'm older, and someone's going to make sure that I'm okay. And I loved all the explanations I've been hearing, you know, what you do. And I guess I'm a slow learner. I just want to hear one more time how you would walk yourself through, or how you did walk yourself through that behavior, and how you learned to turn that over. Thanks.
You're welcome. I really think just, you know, first of all, to recognize what my behavior was like and to realize that I'm just really a pain in the neck. That's putting it nicely, you know, a pain in the neck to live with, because I wanted my way and I wanted this. And the only real answer I can tell you is that I saw other people change, and I just knew instinctively. So I've had a higher power all along that's been working for me. There's no doubt in my mind that even when I didn't recognize it, there was a higher power pushing me towards, you know, towards program and keeping me in program and to not, you know, not leave because I think, oh, now I've got this down. I know how to do this. You know, I'm really grateful for that, because a lot of people that I started out with way back, and they're, you know, I see them today and they're not in program. And they're having a real difficult time. But I just feel like when I can do for others what I can't do for myself sometimes, I think that that's part of the learning lesson, that if I reach out and I'm kind to this person who may not be my favorite person, who may not be, you know, behaving quite the way I would like them to, but to just know that, to have some empathy and sympathy, both, because I've been there. I've behaved like that. And just to know that by putting one foot in front of the other and being kind and living in this, you know, living in my steps and just saying, you know, I mean, I've got people in my life that are just, you know, we used to call them nitpickers. You know, they're fussy about everything and they want everything just so. And I could be that person, but I don't want to be that person. I want to be the person that listens and is empathetic and maybe words of wisdom and maybe not. Maybe sometimes the best thing I can do is just zip my lip and listen and nod my head and know that people need to know they're being heard and that you mean it and that you really care about them. And, you know, and that's what I do. And, you know, this program has affected my kids because my kids were raised with me. You know, they were very young when I came into program. They were only like, you know, 7 and 5. And the changes in me allowed them to be different too, because I was a different kind of mother than I was going, than the way I was headed. I was a much better person, a much better mother. Yeah. Did I still go 100 miles an hour and drive people crazy? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Lots of this, but I'm certainly not perfect in any stretch of the imagination. But I truly love people, and I love to be kind, and I love to care about them, and I love to go into, like, the senior center and go over to somebody and just touch them on the shoulder and say, hello, how are you today? You know, to let them know that they're important. They're important to me. And that I don't want to, and that's what I overdo sometimes. I get too much on my schedule, that other people come before me sometimes, and not always in a great way, that I'll give something special up because I really wanted to do something for somebody else. But I'm not perfect, but I do feel like I have God on my side and many program people and my family, too. My family loves me, and I, you know, I was amazed at that. I was thought, how could they even stand me? And then, not without them saying, hey, you're a pain in the neck sometimes, Marge, but, you know, you're there. I'm there for people, and I'm there, you know, and that's because of, it is because of my spiritual relationship that I can be like that. I hope that helps.
Thank you very much. Barbara A. from California is your question. Shirley S. from North Carolina, your question now. Star one, please. Is it Shirley or Cheryl? I'm not real sure now, but I'm hearing such silence from North Carolina. Well, maybe I got it completely wrong, or she had to step off or something. But, you know, we can open it up to see if there's at least one or two more questions this morning, at least one. Any other questions this morning?
Helen O.
Okay, gotcha. Where are you from, Helen?
Massachusetts.
Becca R.
Toby
W. We got Becca R.
Toby W.
And then Toby W. Hi, Toby. Probably won't get to all three of these, but we'll give it a go. We have about, 6 minutes left or so. Okay, so since we've missed, maybe is it Cheryl S. from North Carolina? Since we've missed her, let's go with Helen O. And Cheryl, you're sure not here, right? If you're having a difficult time being heard, the recommendation is to hang up and dial back in. Sometimes that will reconnect you with your satellite to be able to be heard again. It's one of the techno things. But in the meantime, let's hear from Helen O. from Massachusetts.
Thank you so much, Helen O. from Massachusetts. I'm just so thrilled to be on this meeting this morning. And Marge, God bless you. Wow. Just wonderful, wonderful that I got on this meeting. My question is, and you may have touched on it, but as you are aging, do you notice a change in, what I'm noticing a lot is the change in the quantity of food. I just don't want as much. And I just wondered if you have anything to say about that, just your food portions. As you age, has anything changed that way? Thank you.
Thanks, Helen.
We need to be really careful
question.
About jumping into food questions and things like that, but I'm sure that you'll keep it in light of our recommended.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Melanie. Hi, Helen. Yeah, there has been some changes, and but I use a lot of energy every day. So I what I notice is that I don't quite need as much as I used to. And that's about all I will say about that. But Helen, we can talk about that on the phone.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yeah, please please grab up her phone number. Yeah, we're just in line with the traditions, not meaning to cut anybody off. But, yeah, give her a jangle, and you guys can kind of dive into that a little more deeply, because there are those things that happen for sure. I've had that personally, too. Okay, so one more shout-out for Cheryl before we move on. Yep, it's been my experience. If we're having difficulty to dial back in, hang up and dial back in. We'll see if there's still time. Becca R., your question this morning from Kentucky. Good morning.
Good morning. Becca R., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, calling in from Kentucky. Beautiful share, Marge. Thank you for your experience, strength, and hope. My question is, if you were going through a potential life-changing thing in program, which it sounds like you've had this experience, do you continue sponsoring? That's it.
Okay. I would continue sponsoring unless I was eating. And so I don't know if that's exactly what you're asking me, but if I was eating, I would have to tell people. And it's been recommended over the years that you back off from the sponsoring and you talk to people about what you're doing and get back on the bandwagon. I've had long periods of abstinence, so fortunately most of my, and there's been a lot of life changes, truly, good things, bad things, in-between things, things I wasn't planning on, vacations that got canceled, you know, things like that. But as far as, you know, if I were into the food, I would not sponsor. I'd be too busy doing step 10s, I'm sure. Thank you for the question. I hope it was helpful.
Thank you very much, Becca R. from Kentucky. Your question. Okay, let's see. Toby W., your question this morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Marge and Melanie.
Thank you.
My name is Toby. And I am a recovered food addict living in Norwood with my neighbors. And my question is, I didn't hear you say whether you had a lot of weight to lose and how you were able to manage losing weight, because sometimes I only lose a pound a month and I get discouraged. So I wonder if you can address that or not.
Hi there. Thanks, Toby. Hi, neighbor. When I first came in, I had about 50 pounds to lose, the same 50 I'd lost before without a higher power. And I do have a lot of energy, and I do a lot in a day. And Part of the not eating for me was staying busy, cleaning closets, doing things like that. I really did a lot of physical things to keep, you know, walking and you know, anything I could do to keep my hands busy and away from the food. And I was in my 30s, so it still came off actually pretty rapidly. And again, when I joined Visions and I threw some more food out, I lost weight rather quickly. And I think that just has to do with my metabolism, that the fact that I've always been active and I worked a lot, so I just really was physically moving all the time. And when I had a food plan that I just knew that would help me to lose weight by working with somebody else, so I didn't have a big struggle with losing the weight. My struggle always was, once the weight was off, now what do I do? And I was told many years ago, maintenance, you know, maintenance is a challenge, and it was. It's not now so much, because I think I have a bigger, higher power than I've ever had in my life. That really has shown up since Visions, even though I always had it, and I had some spiritual awakening. I really feel like, since Visions, it's on steroids. How's that? Thanks for the question.
Thank you, Marge.
Thank you very much, Toby W., for that question this morning. And that will be the last question for today, based on the time that we have. So again, Marge, you offered so much of yourself this morning, and we're so grateful. But it is time for us to close. The time went by quickly. And we will close now with our usual fashion by reading from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.